Scioli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
All right, we are live at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago, where we're expecting protests and destruction of property tonight as the kooks come out at their own party, at their own party. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. The question for you this hour is, do you think it helps or hurts Kamala Harris if Joe Biden resigns the presidency tonight? I'm not saying he's going to. I'm not saying that the U-Haul trucks at the White House are an indication of that. I'm just curious what you think. I'm not making a prediction here, but it's a little bit of a pro and con scenario, right? I mean, the pro side is she could say she's the first woman president, and anyone who has any reservations about that, well, you already have a woman president. But the downside is that good luck trying to run as the outsider, the incumbent. I mean, or not the the challenger, you're the incumbent, which she is now. I mean, that's the thing that's so frustrating about this, and I'm sure it's frustrating to you, and I'm sure it's frustrating to every single person you know, is that this is Kamala Harris's administration. She's vice president of the United States. To Laura Lee Trump's point earlier in the show, she steps away from the Oval Office. Steps away. So at her own rally in North Carolina, Jimmy, let's cue up cut number two. I want to play this. At her own rally in North Carolina, Kamala reminds everyone what her administration did to the cost of living in this country. When I heard this, I kept thinking to myself, here's, all right, the first step they always say in life is to acknowledge the problem. That's number one, acknowledge the problem. So if you've got a drinking problem, for example, you have to acknowledge that. And that's the first step to recovery, is acknowledging your own problem and the destruction that it's caused. That's why, remember the Seinfeld episode where they had the alcoholic friend who would call up to apologize, and you acknowledge the destruction you've caused. That's the first step towards recovery, or the second step, or whatever the step is. But whether you're on the wagon or off the wagon, I don't know. But the point is, Kamala Harris is acknowledging the destruction. Great, except you destroyed it. You broke it. There's an old saying, you break it, you buy it, which is why I don't let my children touch anything when we go into stores, anything, because I can't afford to buy it in this economy. So she stands up there at this rally, goes on and on about how much better life was 4 years ago. Look, it's important to note the Washington Post editorial board came out and did an op-ed, or an editorial, I should say, against Kamala Harris's price gouging plan. Now, the Washington Post is owned by Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos owns Whole Foods. So as a grocer, he doesn't want to see that. And grocery stores, you know, you make grocery stores the bad guy. Their profit margins, just so you know, are about 1.88%. So you're talking about people with profit margins of less than 2%, and you're going to go after those people. The other point, too, about food controls, food controls, whatever it is, whatever price controls you want to fix, whatever you want to put in place, is that inevitably it leads to scarcity. It does. It's inevitable. It leads to scarcity. That's where the term breadlines come from. Because if you don't have a market that is there to provide the demand that consumers have, because the market is not based on supply and demand, the market is now based on caps. So you can't sell something for more than this price. Well, if I need to, because it's the only way I can make that, I can't make it anymore. So you have less supply of something in the marketplace. Everybody knows this. It's Econ 101. It's literally Econ 101. If you tell me I can't charge more than $5 for something, say $5 for a pizza, but it cost me $6 to make it, I can't make it anymore because I'm losing money. So why would I make something if I'm going to lose money? The whole point of an economy is to make money. The whole point of an economy is what? It's to make money. And then by making money, you make other people money. People that work for you, people who buy from you, who are your suppliers, for example. I've told you this book before, Nobody Knows How to Make a Pizza by Julie Borowski. It's a great book. We read it to our kids because I want my kids to grow up and be capitalists and not communists. And in the book, it's all about how nobody knows how to make a pizza because nobody knows where pizza comes from. I'm not talking about Chicago pizza because that's not pizza. That's a casserole identifying as a pizza, but it's not a pizza. I am a pizzaologist. I may not be a biologist, but I'm a pizzaologist, and I make pizza in my wood-fired pizza oven, so I know what a pizza is. But in terms of where the tomatoes come from, where does the flour come from, where does the cheese come from, And then all the people along the way in the supply chain who provide that to the pizzeria in order for them to be able to make a pizza. And that's the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. So it's a kid's book, and it's exciting for them because it's all with people. And there's a point in the book where Julie acknowledges, why do all these people pick the tomatoes and then milk their cows and then turn that milk into mozzarella? Or in my case, they're buffaloes. They're water buffaloes because I use buffalo mozzarella on my pizza. Why do they do all these things? The answer is to make money. That's why they do these things. If they can't make money, they don't do them anymore. You're not going out there and growing tomatoes and picking tomatoes and if you can't make money. And then the guy who's going to transport those tomatoes to whatever distribution place, if he's not making money, he's not driving the tomatoes over to the distribution place. It's not that complicated. And ultimately, if the pizzeria guy can't make money, he's going to close up his business. Because if he can't make money, he can't pay his rent. If he can't make money, he can't pay his employees. So the goal here is to make money. The left views that as a negative. They always have. I don't understand that. I don't understand that mindset. Because if I'm not making money, say I own a pizza shop and I'm not making money, I don't have any employees, then my employees aren't making money. Then you got a vacant storefront. So now that storefront's not paying property taxes. It's really not that complicated. And, you know, if I'm not buying my Caputo flour, then Cento's not making money. So the whole point of our system is for everybody to make money. And then as people make money, they spend that money at other places. You start putting in price controls, you start limiting the amount people can charge on something or the amount that somebody they can charge in reaction to something. So this is another little game the left always does. And if you've been listening to this show for a long time, and thank you if you have, or thank you if you're new. The show grows every day. Appreciate it very much. Welcome to the Zeoli Army if you're new. And yes, the Zeoli Army, just so you know, was established in 2015. As other talk show hosts, not naming names, now have their army, the Zeoli Army is the original, the OG Army. We started in 2015. I didn't start it. It was a grassroots effort by the audience, that's what it is, the most organic thing in radio. Nothing like it. It was not corporate driven. Certainly not, but this company doesn't invest in me, please. It was literally the listeners who did it and came up with it themselves. So, point is, if you've been listening to me for a long time, you know that I've always railed against price gouging laws in emergencies. And we've talked about this a number of times on the show. And this is where sometimes conservatives part ways with me on this. They go, yeah, but in an emergency, it's different. No, it's not. Actually, it's not different. Because if you have price gouging laws during an emergency, and you say you can't sell batteries for $6, you can only sell them for what the normal battery price is, then there's an incentive for people to hoard things. And then there's not enough supply for everybody else. Actually, high prices keep a number of things available for all kinds of consumers. So you only buy the gas you need. You don't go in with 5-gallon drums of gas. And then the left will turn around and go, well, then you put limits on the amount people can buy. Well, that doesn't work. Because I'll go to the store and, okay, I can only buy two things. I need more, so I make multiple trips. How are you going to know? I send my wife in. She buys two. I buy two. I remember during COVID, a lot of people remember this. You would probably go to the store with your spouse, and they were at checkout line 13, and you were at checkout line 12. My parents did this. I caught them doing it. So they'd have a grocery cart loaded up at the checkout aisle, and my dad's right next to my mother at the other aisle, pretending like they didn't know each other. How many times did people do that when they had limits on things? Paper towels and toilet paper, but you needed them. So that doesn't work either. The only way it works is if the economy is left to work. In which case, then, if there's such demand for batteries and the price of batteries goes up, people buy only what they need. That's called an efficient marketplace. Again, something that people who have read basic economics understand. If you haven't read basic economics, because you've read, I'll tell you something else too. When Kamala Harris was giving her speech on price gauging, it sounded to me like a bad book report on Karl Marx. That's what it sounded like to me. It sounded like she had to give a book report on the Communist Manifesto, but she didn't read the book. So she stood up there and started spouting off the highlights. And the entire time you're thinking to yourself, you didn't read the book, did you? No, didn't read the book. I know. So here's her rally in North Carolina, Kamala Harris reminding everybody what the administration did to create all these problems. Cut two.
Everyday prices are too high. It feels so hard to just be able to get ahead. The bills add up. Food, rent, gas, back to school clothes, prescription medication, the cost of food. A loaf of bread cost 50% more. Ground beef is up almost 50%. There's a serious housing shortage. The price of housing has gone up. It's too difficult to build, and it's driving prices up. It is out of reach. The size of down payments have gone up as well. Costs are still too high. There's not much left at the end of the month, and prices are still too high.
And prices are still too high, and there's not much left at the end of the month. Hey, bang up job. We should give you the presidency. You did so great, we should make you the CEO. Think about that. If this was a business right now, if this was a company, and that person was the number two, would you honestly believe that that company would promote her to CEO? Of course not. But we don't run America like a business. We run this country, well, at least Democrats do. Democrats run this country like it is a giveaway program. Who can we give away? What can we give away to who next? The other point about high prices, just so you understand, is that it incentivizes people to make more of that product to make money. So if I can't make money doing something, I'm not going to make it. Higher prices incentivizes me, the producer, to create more of something that you need. That also goes away in communism. That's why you don't have enough supply of whatever the demand is, and you have to have government-implemented controls on what is a scarce availability of whatever product we're talking about. That's where breadlines come from, scarcity. Scarcity exists in those kind of economies because the incentive to create enough of the whatever it is, the widget to meet the demand is not there. So you still have a demand. The demand's there, but there's not enough of the product because the incentive to create that product is gone. So then the government steps in and gives you a little coupon for your vegan, nut-free, soy-free. Can you imagine what a mess this is going to be with the left and all their food allergies? You imagine what that's going to be like when you've got the vegan, nut-free, dairy-free, soy-free, gluten-free bread line, and then next door to it you got the milk lines with the free-range cow and the grass-fed cow, and you got the soy cow, the soy milk, and the oat milk, and these people won't eat for months. But that's ultimately what happens. The government gives you your little coupon, and then you go and you wait in line and you get your share for the day because the marketplace doesn't have enough incentive to keep going. Here's another problem that happens. Stores begin to shut down. So then you have something that's known as a food desert. So a food desert, great example of this, Camden, New Jersey. Camden, New Jersey does not have a grocery store. It's a food desert. And this is a frustrating problem for a lot of areas that are in inner city areas. They don't have grocery stores. They have to rely on convenience stores. Convenience stores are typically more expensive. Their products are more expensive. And then the other problem that you have with convenience stores is that you tend to have less healthy products. So you have less healthy fruits and vegetables, for example, fresh food. You don't have a lot of fresh fruit in convenience stores. So as grocery stores begin to close, and they will, you'll wind up having more food deserts. And that's why in those areas, you see it typically, a lot of people in those areas don't have transportation, so they can't go to the burbs to buy food, fresh food, and healthier products. So they have to make choices, and they wind up buying unhealthier food. That's why you see obesity rates are higher in those parts of the country. You see that you've got higher rates of diabetes. And then what do you have? How does the left answer that? With taxes. To try to bring down the health products they put or the health issues, they'll put a sugary beverage tax. These things also it discriminate against the poor because the poor go into these food desert areas. They go to convenience stores. They don't have a lot of healthy options. They wind up buying soda. So now you're hitting them twice because you're not giving them the same selection that they'd get if they were able to drive over to Ardmore and go to a big, beautiful grocery store. And you're charging them a tax on the already limited supply of beverages that they're able to get in these food deserts. But grocers turn around and go, I can't make money, so I'm out. So I'm shutting down my grocery stores in Philadelphia, and I'm just going to open them up in the burbs. We literally saw this happen with the soda tax. And as they put in the soda tax, what happened? People who did have the ability to get in a car and drive and go to a grocery store outside of the city would just buy their sugary beverages there. But what else would they do? They'd do all their grocery shopping there, too. So then grocery stores in Philadelphia closed. There was no incentive to keep them open. This is not that complicated. Well, I guess it is complicated if you're an idiot and you don't understand how the marketplace works. In which case, then, it's very, very complicated for you. Here's Kamala Harris. It's Cube Cut number one, Jimmy. Kamala Harris going on a very confusing rant, repeating herself multiple times while talking about democracy. Cut number one.
That's what our election is about. Our election is about understanding the importance of this beautiful country of ours in terms of what we stand for around the globe as a democracy. As a democracy, we know there's a duality to the nature of democracy. On the one hand, incredible strength when it is intact. What it does for its people. To protect and defend their rights, their liberty, and their freedom. Incredibly strong and incredibly fragile.
Oh, so fragile. Guess what will make it even more fragile? Controls on price gauging. That's right. She called it gauging, not gouging. That's the problem. It's called gouging, but Kamala Harris took a question from the press. It's Cube Cut number three. Went exactly as you would expect. She explains that it is a mistake to ask how she plans to pay for the few economic proposals that she's outlined in her campaign. All right, the $25,000 first-time homebuyer credit, the expanded child tax care credit, all these other things that she's promising. They want to build all these units of affordable housing, so-called affordable housing, millions of units, which the government is incapable of building. And there's no answer in how we're going to pay for any of this stuff. But again, that's why she's running for class president. We're going to give you free pizza on Fridays, no homework, and school trips. We're going to go on awesome places. We'll go to all these great places. How are you going to pay for all this? Doesn't matter. I can't implement them anyway, even if I won, because I'm class president. And the principal has to implement all that stuff. But this is the real deal. She's running for president of the United States of America, so I thought. Cut number three.
Some economic policies last week.
Yeah.
Can you explain how you're going to pay for those? And can you give us a sense of what other policies you want to unveil going forward?
Sure. Well, I mean, you just look at it in terms of what we are talking about, for example, around children and the child tax credit and extending the EITC. It's at $6,000 for the first year of a child's life. The return on that investment in terms of what that will do and what it will pay for will be tremendous. We've seen it when we did it the first year of our administration. We reduced child poverty by over 50%. So that's a lot of the work. And then what we're doing in terms of the tax credits, we know that there's a great return on that investment. And when we increase home ownership in America, what that means in terms of increasing the tax base, not to mention property tax base, what that does to fund schools, again, return on investment. I think it's a mistake for any person who talks about public policy to not critically evaluate how you measure the return on investment. When you are strengthening neighborhoods, strengthening communities, and in particular the economy of those communities, and investing in a broad-based economy, everybody benefits, and it pays for itself.
It pays for itself, but that's the point. We ask you how you're going to pay for it. And, you know, all these great investments in communities that you're talking about, they're made by private entities, private businesses, private sectors. But so you understand the mindset of a person like Kamala Harris and why she's truly an authoritarian, I always tell you one of my Zioli axioms is when people show you who they are, listen to them. All right? Talk is cheap. When people show you who they are, listen to them. So the kind of person Kamala Harris is, just so you understand, and let's cue up cut number five, Jimmy. This is where she's literally threatening to unilaterally confiscate citizens' and businesses' private property. So you understand something. Somebody creates something in the marketplace, they're incentivized to do so to make money, but it comes with a lot of heartbreak. In many cases, bankruptcies. People who have decided to start their own businesses. Sometimes they go bankrupt. People who decide to create a product, sometimes that product doesn't come to market. They can't. They can't get it to launch. Can't get it to work, whatever it is. But sometimes they do, and they get lucky and they get rich. But when those people get rich, other people turn around and go, man, I want to figure out how I can get rich too. So then I'm incentivized to take a risk, maybe to start my own business. maybe to start my own podcast, maybe just to create my own little invention. That's the incentive, is knowing that, yeah, I may have to take an enormous risk. I could lose money. I could lose my house. I could lose everything. But I also know that if I'm successful, I could have all this money, and I might be able to live a life that people only dream about. So risk takers are incentivized to roll the dice and risk it all, because the rewards out there are huge. But they're only huge because then there are protections in place to keep people from stealing your idea. And that's where things like patents come in. So that you can't, you create something and the next guy can't just literally take what you've created, your hard work, your blood, sweat, and tears, and then just copy it and steal it. And there's a lot of that goes on. You know, Amazon.com is littered with cheap knockoffs from China, sometimes from the very same people that make the actual product. Part of the reason why we've got to get manufacturing back here in the United States of America is so that we can stop with all the knockoffs. But you know the knockoffs are on there, and you see them. It's the exact same product, probably made by the very same people that make the actual product, but they're knockoffs. And that is called property theft, intellectual property theft. And so you have laws in place to protect that. Sometimes those laws are for short periods of time. This is why pharmaceutical companies get a patent on a drug, and they're only able to keep that patent for so long. The left hates that. But the cost of bringing a new drug to market with all the regulations and everything else can be literally close to $1 billion. So that's why they have to then get a return on that investment for a period of time. Otherwise, there's no incentive for them to try to make the next great drug, the next great life-saving drug. It all works. The economy works if the government stays out of it. But when the government starts meddling or puts their hand into the mix and starts to move things around, you take away incentive. And so an authoritarian, a tyrant, doesn't believe in somebody's intellectual property, doesn't believe in somebody's hard work. They believe that you didn't build that. You didn't build that. Government helped you build that. That's why Barack Obama, when he gave that famous speech, remember, you didn't build that? That's the mindset. So Kamala Harris would just take away a patent. She would just steal that from somebody who's invented something. If the government decides they need it, they like it better, or if they can find a way to monetize it to then subsidize something else, they'll just take it from you. You'll just steal it. Cut number 5.
I will snatch their patent, so that we will take over. And yes, we can do that. Yes, we
Why
can
not?
Do that.
Why not?
Yes, we can do that. The question is, do you have the will to do it? I have the will to do it.
Somebody shows you who they are, you listen. All right? She's got the will to do it. She believes philosophically that she can do it, and she will. Now, that was during her very short-lived presidential campaign that was set in Iowa back in 2019. And even people in the room were like, I don't know if you can really do that, but I'll clap. It sounds great. She's like, yes, we can. We can. We just need the will. I have the will to do it. Government will just come in and steal intellectual property. Amazing. Hey, listen, as we're live here at the Democrat National Convention, I want to thank my friends at Emmons Roofing and Siding for their incredible work, including the incredible work they just did at my house. We replaced a kitchen door. They put in a beautiful, beautiful door, and that's what Emmons does. Your home will not only look beautiful from the street, but it's going to be better protected, better insulated. And right now, Emmons is offering for each and every one of my listeners an inflation relief discount of 10%. 10% off Anderson window replacement, 10% off roofing and siding. You get a lifetime warranty on that new roof with the best in the business, the Owens Corning shingle. 10% off new doors. So what are you waiting for? Reach out to the team that I trust, the team that I've used now in 2 different homes for the course of 8 years. EmmonsRoofing.com, EMMONS. They serve our entire region, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. 856-885-6677. 856-885-6677. Now, with me, trust is everything. I got to know that the people in my home, I can trust them. I got to know the work's going to be done on time, on budget, and I'm going to be happy when it's done. Well, Emmons guarantees all of that for you. It's great. And Matt and Stephanie are dedicated to your customer satisfaction because they know how important you are to me. So what are you waiting for? EmmonsRoofing.com, EmmonsRoofing.com.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
Now, I just heard Austin was just telling me, Matt DeSantis, that you ate so much Chicago pizza last night, he barely got a slice.
That's true.
What he told me. He said it was disgusting to watch, is what he said.
I'm not going to deny it. I did eat a lot of it. but it wasn't to the point where people around me were like gawking.
Disgusted.
And taking photos. Yeah.
Now, when you eat a Chicago pizza, which is not pizza, so I'm going to call it a Chicago casserole because I'm not. I refuse. It's a casserole trying to identify as a pizza, and I refuse to play that game. So, when you eat a Chicago casserole, how many carbs do you estimate are in one of those slices of? Hunk of what is it? Just bread, right?
It's and mostly cheese and bread and cheese. Yeah,
yeah.
I think if you want to enjoy the pizza, it's best that you not dwell on on the calorie count because it. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. It can't be good. I mean, just one slice of it was actually pretty filling.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can imagine. I mean, it's not why I'm not going to be eating it while I'm here. Now, I did find out. From when I was doing Jimmy Fallon's Saturday Night Show, shameless plug, on Fox News Saturday Night, which, by the way, was a blast. If you haven't seen it, please take a look at the replay. We'll post it.
Heard you were great.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. But Victor, his EP, was telling me that Chicago is known actually for they have a lot of very thin pies, like thin bar pies, too. And there's a place called Paisanos. A couple people emailed me about that and tweeted me about that. Paisanos has really good thin and crispy pizza. And we saw that right. By the way, you heard I was great. Why didn't you tune in Saturday night?
I was busy.
This is why you are Matt DeSanct, the traitorous. There's no loyalty, none whatsoever. Unbelievable.
I intended to watch it, but I got busy.
What were you doing Saturday night at 10 p.m.?
Well, I traveled to Cincinnati before I came to Chicago. I went out to dinner.
You should have pulled over to a place and watched it. That's what a real friend would have done. That's what executive producer would have done.
I'll watch it next time.
By the way, if you're wondering why my thumb, I'm wearing this compression thing on my thumb right now as I do the thumbs up. It's because I'm fragile, as you know, and Patrick and I were wrestling on a raft, my friend's boat, my friend Nikki and Alan, and I jammed my thumb that day, and of course I'm incredibly weak and fragile, so now I have to wear this compression brace on.
Earlier you said you got injured on a boat. I thought you were, I don't know, wrestling a shark or something. Somebody fell overboard, you had to rescue them. I didn't know you heard it on a raft.
I should probably change the story a little bit. So what happened is that we hit some rough seas on the Delaware River, and people went overboard, and I had to jump in and rescue them. And as I was hoisting my children up from the crazy waters, I jammed my thumb against the boat. But I was happy to do it, knowing I saved all of those lives. That's probably a better story.
Very heroic. It's amazing that you walked away almost unscathed.
Yeah, with just a thumb compression brace on, and that's it. But it's part of the reason why I'm so fragile, I think, that Mama Zioli feels the need to call me up this morning and leave not one, but two voicemail messages for me telling me to be careful, baby. And I'm going to play those for you now. I don't know the numbers. What are the numbers on the cut sheet for those?
I don't think they're actually on the cut sheet. Jim should just have them loose.
So, Jim, you should just have voicemail one and voicemail two. Let me just tell you the times on this. So I was just saying before, my flight yesterday was a total S show. I wound up, my flight was canceled. So I was getting ready to leave, and then they canceled my flight. Then I had to rebook my flight because I had to get here, and I could only fly into Chicago Midway, not O'Hare, which is fine, except that my hotel last night was at O'Hare, so then it was a 50-minute Uber drive to get to the hotel, and then when I got to the airport, the flight was delayed. So I think I got to my room at 3 a.m. finally last night, starting the week off on a high note. So then this morning, my mother calls me, and let me just give you the times. Remember, we're an hour behind here. The first voicemail is at 6:18 a.m., all right? 6:18 a.m. for my mother. This is Chicago time now. 6:18 a.m. for my mother calling to leave a voicemail telling me to be careful, baby. And then the second, the follow-up, just in case I didn't get the first memo, 8:56 a.m. All right? Chicago time from my mother. So let's take a listen, shall we, to voicemail number one from Mama Zioli. This is not fake. This is not artificial intelligence. This is as real as it gets, and probably why I'm so fragile. Take a listen.
Hey, Rich, it's your mother. I'm just calling to warn you about the city you're in, Chicago. It's not a nice city. It's full of crime. And I think you should eat your meals in the hotel or at the convention center. Don't go wandering the streets, honey, okay? And you know what? If you were friends with Sean Hannity, he's got bodyguards. So maybe you should become friends with him. If not, please just eat your meals in the hotel or the convention center, okay, honey? It's really, you're not used to a city like that. Okay, be careful. I love you so much. It's your mother. Bye-bye.
That is as mama's aioli as you get right there. Eat your food in the hotel, even if it's a vending machine. She'd rather me eat Cheetos out of a vending machine than risk my life on the streets of Chicago. You're not used to a city like this. I broadcast out of Philadelphia. What did you, I mean, last time I checked, Philadelphia has crime, too. You're not used to a city like this, baby. And how about the subtle jab, too, that her son is not as successful as Sean Hannity? Did you get that? Also part of my issues. Like, you know, like if you were as good as Hannity, you'd have bodyguards. If you were as successful as Sean Hannity, you'd have bodyguards.
Well, you have me.
Yeah, I got DeSantis, who, please, couldn't even find his way through the convention center.
I entice criminals, probably. Like, I look like a victim.
Richie, if only you were as good as Sean Hannity, your show would be nationally syndicated,
you'd have
bodyguards.
You'd have Newt Gingrich on every day, and you'd be able to pre-record. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to say
that's
that.
Right. Yeah, don't give away that.
I don't want to give away that one, yeah. You'd be able to have best ofs.
Thank you. Yeah, best ofs, right. But that wasn't enough for Mama Zioli. She also had a call then 2 hours later after she was watching Fox and Friends, and they had a mother detail how she lost her son in Chicago. So that prompted another phone call and another voicemail from Mama Zioli, even more over the top than the first one. Take a listen.
Hey, Rich, it's your mother again. Listen, there was a woman on Fox this morning who lost her son in Chicago, and she was hysterical crying. Just please don't go out for food. Just eat whatever they have in the hotel. They have machines. You could eat that for the next 4 days. Chicago's a very, very dangerous place, and I don't want to be that mother next year. Okay, so just please take care of yourself. Don't think you're invincible. You're not. And you're not used to a crime-ridden city. All right, honey? All right, I'm scared that you're there. I wish you weren't. I love you. Have a good day, honey. Be safe. Bye.
You're not invincible. You're not strong. You hurt your thumb on a boat because you're so weak and fragile. Please don't leave the hotel. I got it. Got it. Got it all. Not as successful as Sean Hannity, and I'm also fragile.
I like that she introduces herself during each phone call, as if you might not recognize your own mother.
Right, like as I'm listening 40 seconds in, going, who's this woman telling me to be careful? I can't tell. Thank God she let us know who it was. Thank God it's Mama Zioli, and, you know, I'm so very happy to hear that. Because that would have been confusing. I'm like, wow, it's so random that a woman just called up my phone and left me all these messages telling me to be careful, baby. And it sounds so much like my mother, but obviously, how could it be my mother? I wouldn't know that unless my mother said it's your mother. So there you go.
I thought they were very nice messages. That was very kind of Mama Zioli to warn you about the crime in Chicago.
Of course, as you got a kiss up to Mama Zioli.
I like Mama Zioli.
We love Mama Zioli. We do. We love Mama Zioli. She makes us very, very happy. And I'll be careful, baby. So tonight it's whatever's in the vending machine for me. I think I'm Snapple and Doritos. Cool Ranch Doritos and Snapple, I guess, is what I'll be having. So I'm looking forward to that. Going to be a lot of fun. And then I got the gratuitous text from Papa Zioli as well. So Papa Zioli getting in on the action by texting me earlier today the following. Ready? This is great. See if I can find this here from my dad. Where is it? I just had it here, and now I've lost it. Let's see. Where'd it go? I had it. I'll find it. I'll find the Papa Zioli follow-up text. It's somewhere here. I think we're just having connection issues at the Democrat National Convention today. That's probably what's going on. Or maybe they just... Oh, here it is. Here's my dad's text. Ready? Be very diligent while you're in the convention. Chicago is a very crime-ridden city. So my dad had to double down on my mom's two voicemails to also warn me to be careful.
I have a theory.
Go ahead.
I think your mom told your dad to send that text.
Because she didn't think I'd listen to the voicemails?
Yeah. She wasn't certain that you got the two voicemails.
Yeah. So she had my dad also send the text to put the bow on it
for us?
That's
what my mom would do.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, that's the Italian mother for you. Listen, if you want to be happy, you got to go to my happy place, which is the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. It's certainly not here at the convention. No. But we will be back live on Friday, September 6th for our next live show at my happy place, the Grand Hotel. And we love summer, right? Of course we do. How can you not? But the best time of the year to go, in my opinion, is the fall. Because fall in Cape May is great. The crowds are gone. The weather's beautiful. They have all kinds of fall festivals. Cape May in particular has so much going on. And the Grand offers special midweek packages, so you can enjoy the beautiful fall season without breaking the bank. Stay two nights, you're going to save 10%. Stay three nights, get 10% off and $55 a night in resort credits. Stay five nights, get 10% off and $65 a night in resort credits. And you can use these resort credits at Hemingway's restaurant, excuse me, for food and drinks, or at the gift shop. The Grand offers huge, beautiful guest rooms, townhomes, and suites equipped with a kitchenette, and they have two huge heated pools, one outdoor and one indoor. I'm telling you, the Grand is my happy place for a reason. Book direct with them for the best rates. You will not be disappointed. And if you're looking to do an event, how about a beautiful fall wedding, baby shower, bridal shower, corporate retreat, whatever you want to do, just call my friend Caitlin. She'll take great care of you and give you the event of your dreams. Caitlin is a certified wedding planner, and she's been written up and recognized for planning just the most beautiful beachfront weddings imaginable. With four ballrooms, including the ballroom we'll be doing the show from live on Friday, September 6th, you can't go wrong. 800-257-8550. 800-257-8550, or visit them online at grandhotelcapemay.com, and we'll see you there Friday, September 6th.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. We are live at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. It's great to be with you. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Scioli if you want to weigh in today. We are going to talk to a pollster in the next hour who is, I think, really insightful in terms of why the polls are not accurate in showing Trump's strength. But just so you know, and just so you understand, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are very concerned about how well Kamala Harris is doing. I don't believe it. I really don't. And I don't think it's something to lose sleep over. I really don't. I don't, because, first of all, her economic plan is a disaster. What she rolled out is a disaster. No doubt about it. But people are also not buying it. Now, I know that there's a lot of dumb people out there, or as Rush would call them, you know, low-information voters. I get it. I know that. I just think there's a lot of idiots out there, and they just sound, they go, oh, yeah, the price of bacon should be capped. This is ridiculous. Greedy bacon people. And if you can convince people like that, that, yeah, it's just a secret cabal of grocery store heads who are all coming together to conspire to just raise prices, if you can convince people that, yeah, they're going to believe it. But I think those people are probably voting Democrat anyway. Look, the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm, just walked by. She won't come on the show, of course. And I didn't have time to go and try to get in her face with a microphone and do one of those, you know, ambush interviews. But I would ask her, you know, what are your plans to get gas prices down? Remember the time that they asked her and she laughed? She just laughed about it? That's the thing. Government's not very good at dealing with prices of anything or dealing with any shortages. So what do they wind up doing? They wind up having something called a Strategic Petroleum Reserve and tapping it. An energy supply that is there for bad days, bad things, very, very bad things. They'll tap it to lower prices of gas as election schemes, little tricks that they play on people all the time. But it's not going over well. Jimmy, let's cue up cut number seven. So the Washington Post columnist Catherine Rampell cautioned that a proposal by Vice President Kamala Harris to regulate prices could backfire. And liken it to policies previously seen enacted by authoritarian governments. This is the Washington Post saying this. As we get ready to play cut number seven, I just want to mention to you that J.D. Vance in Philadelphia today, as I'm here at the DNC, picked up a cheesesteak at Pat's. He went to Pat's. The question was always going to be, because they always go, it's either Pat's or Geno's, right? He wound up going to Pat's, and we're told he got whiz with onions. So whiz whiff is what he wound up ordering at Pat's. All right, in case you're wondering, that's what happened today in Philadelphia after he gave his speech. So there you go. I guess we'll find out how he liked it in a little bit. We also have Pat Loeb from KYW is at the protests that are happening right now. Now, there's not a lot of them yet because most of the protesters are still in bed. Let's face it. They're not at work. They're in bed. So they're going to probably come out tonight. They really like to cause destruction and mayhem and chaos at night. We'll grab you some audio of the protests that are going on right now outside the Democrat National Convention. But it's important to note, they're nowhere near here. Nowhere near here. They have zones set up for the protesters. And this place is locked down. So they're not getting anywhere near the convention center. But they're still going to get a lot of media attention. They'll get a lot of media attention. And this is not what the Democrats want. They don't want this. But they're going to get it because the Democrat Party is insane. They have not locked down crazy. These are Democrat voters, and they're angry that the Democrat Party stands with Israel, even though I think that's like saying, you know, like a guy who's a serial killer stands with his victims. I mean, it's not, they really don't stand with Israel. It's all for show. It's all for pretend. But the fact that they're willing to pretend that is something that these crazy people just can't tolerate. But here's Washington Post columnist telling CNN that costs might actually increase if Kamala Harris's price gauging plans are put into place. Cut number 7.
Catherine, I read your piece and I heard you just mention it. The federal ban on price gouging for groceries. You are skeptical of this. Why?
Well, first of all, nobody can explain what price gouging means. It's like that old line about pornography. I know it when I see it. In the sense that, what does it mean to have an excessive price or an excessive profit margin? That seems to be shorthand for a price or a profit margin that bugs me, that seems too high. So, you know, it's very hard to pin down what this would actually mean. If you look at the legislation that, as I mentioned, is already in the Senate, led by Senate Warren and Senator Bob Casey and a slew of others, the particular way that this is written, which is likely to be the template for any proposal that Harris would eventually embrace, is especially bad in that it just bans excessive prices, grossly excessive prices, grossly excessive profit margins, and says that the Federal Trade Commission can use any metric it deems appropriate to decide what that would mean. Which basically says, like, it's not going to be markets, it's not going to be supply and demand that's determining how much your grocery store charges you for milk or for eggs. It's going to be some bureaucrat in D.C., which seems like totally unworkable, first of all, for the FTC to be deciding, like, how much Kroger charges for eggs in Michigan. But it also would be very bad for markets. We've seen this kind of thing tried in lots of other countries before, Venezuela, Argentina, the Soviet Union, etc. It leads to shortages. It leads to black markets, you know, plenty of uncertainty. And beyond that, the specific way this bill is written might actually increase prices because of some of the other language in it, things like requiring companies, public companies, to disclose in their quarterly reports, their quarterly earnings reports, how they're setting prices, which is a great way to help them collude, which normally we don't want them to do. So anyway, you know, the devil's in the details, I guess, for that bill. But it's really hard for me to imagine any form of legislation that preserves the spirit of what she's proposing that would not be, you know, at best do nothing, at worst cause a lot of harm.
At best, cause a lot of, at worst, whatever. Yeah, exactly right. Let's understand a couple things here, too. I don't believe for a second that they actually intend to implement any of this nonsense. I don't. Because they can't. It's not going to survive court challenges. It's a bunch of BS. It's all talk. It's all talk. But if it did happen, it would lead to those kind of shortages that she's describing. Absolutely. But I think this is pure and utter BS. They're coming out with a plan just so that they have a plan. That's it. And they just name an agency. Oh, the FTC will regulate. Oh, the FTC will step in. But you know what the FTC is actually doing? They're actually trying right now to stop the merger of Kroger and that other grocery store chain. They're in the middle of doing that right now. They don't want to see it. They don't want to see it. So the Federal Trade Commission, which has a long history of jumping in and meddling in private businesses, trying to stop this merger because they don't like the idea that two grocery stores could come together and form a big one. But you know something? I read this great Reason.com article about this over the weekend. Do you realize that number one and number two grocery stores in the country are actually Costco and Walmart? Did you know that? Costco and Walmart are actually the number one and two grocery stores in America. That's where most people, Albertsons, right, thank you, Matt, Kroger and Albertsons. That's where most people do their grocery shopping. And they do a lot of it at, because Sam's Club, which is owned by Walmart, is also another big, and then here's another thing that people do with their groceries. They buy them online, too. People also buy groceries online. So how are you going to have a marketplace step in? How are you going to have the government step in and do this? Here's something else to consider as well. If you're going to start trying to stop these two grocery stores from merging, because you don't like the idea of a big, bad grocery store, because you want, theoretically, more competition, all right? You want more competition. Then why would you turn around and tell grocery stores you can't raise your prices over a certain margin, even though those grocery stores, their price margins are about 2%. That's what they wind up, their profit margin is about 2%. So why would anybody then take the time to build another grocery store, create another grocery store? It's not the fact that Albertsons and Kroger might merge that might keep other people out of the industry. You already have massive grocery store monopolies, not monopolies now, but massive grocery stores now. They're called Walmart and Costco. I mean, we go to Costco all the time in my family. We have to. We have three kids. We go to Costco constantly. But there are certain things I go to Wegmans for. Because if I want to get fresh seafood or something like that, I typically go to Wegmans for that kind of stuff. Can't get everything at Costco. Can't get everything I want. But the government steps in to try to stop these two grocery store chains from merging. And then the government goes after them. So then, if that merger doesn't go through, by the way, that means then you're going to have less incentive, believe it or not, for smaller grocery stores to try to come to market and compete. Because the whole purpose behind a small grocery store is to say, we are there to compete against big stores by offering something different. So maybe we have to charge a little bit more, but we give you a different experience. This is how a marketplace works. In the face of what the government views as monopolies, big businesses, a smaller option is created for consumers who want a different kind of experience. They want a more luxurious experience, for example. And that's what happens in a marketplace. They don't want to go to a big grocery store. They don't want to go to a big chain. They don't want to go to a big box store. So they wind up going to a little mom-and-pop deli, a little mom-and-pop grocery store. But there's no incentive for those stores to come about if they're going to have their prices capped. Because a Walmart can sustain it. A Costco can sustain it. Kroger's sustain it, and Albertsons can, even if they don't wind up merging. But when you have these big grocery stores come together, it gives them the ability to survive the challenging headwinds of an industry. It gives them more security by merging together, which then gives their employees more security, which is why the employees should want to see this, because they're going to have more job security if this goes through. Because I think that if two grocery stores wind up merging together and joining forces together, and you believe in a free market system, that means then more stability for them. They wind up having to not compete against each other anymore. They can compete against other people. Walmart saves the average family over $3,000 a year, and that measurement was as of 2010. It has obviously gone up since then. So there's an answer to big box stores, and they do save families money, but some people don't want that experience. They want a different experience. But if the government goes after these stores, there's no incentive then for me to open up Richie's grocery store or Mama Zioli's grocery store, where you walk in and you're immediately warned about all the harm that could hit you everywhere around the store. Her voice beaming through. You know, like most of the time they beam, they go, oh, we're having a sale on olives. It'd be like, careful, baby. Watch your saturated fat intake. All right. Very high saturated fat in aisle number 4. We've got 30 minutes of nonstop talk coming up straight ahead for you, brought to you by our friends at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. We are live at the Democrat National Convention. We're coming right back.
Rich Zioli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app. Thanks for listening to the Zioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. We are live at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. It's great to be with you. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zioli if you want to weigh in today. We are going to talk to a pollster in the next hour who is, I think, really insightful in terms of why the polls are not accurate in showing Trump's strength. But just so you know, and just so you understand, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are very concerned about how well Kamala Harris is doing. I don't believe it. I really don't. And I don't think it's something to lose sleep over. I really don't. I don't, because, first of all, her economic plan is a disaster. What she rolled out is a disaster. No doubt about it. But people are also not buying it. Now, I know that there's a lot of dumb people out there, or as Rush would call them, you know, low-information voters. I get it. I know that. I just think there's a lot of idiots out there, and they just sound, they go, oh, yeah, the price of bacon should be capped. This is ridiculous. Greedy bacon people. And if you can convince people like that, that, yeah, it's just a secret cabal of grocery store heads who are all coming together to conspire to just raise prices. If you can convince people that, yeah, they're going to believe it. But I think those people are probably voting Democrat anyway. Look, the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm, just walked by. She won't come on the show, of course. And I didn't have time to go and try to get in her face with a microphone and do one of those, you know, ambush interviews. But I would ask her, you know, what are your plans to get gas prices down? Remember the time that they asked her and she laughed? She just laughed about it? That's the thing. Government's not very good at dealing with prices of anything or dealing with any shortages. So what do they wind up doing? They wind up having something called a Strategic Petroleum Reserve and tapping it. An energy supply that is there for bad days, bad things, very, very bad things, they'll tap it to lower prices of gas as election schemes, little tricks that they play on people all the time. But it's not going over well. Jimmy, let's cue up cut number 7. So the Washington Post economist or columnist Catherine Rampell cautioned that a proposal by Vice President Kamala Harris to regulate prices could backfire. And liken it to policies previously seen enacted by authoritarian governments. This is the Washington Post saying this. As we get ready to play cut number 7, I just want to mention to you that J.D. Vance in Philadelphia today, as I'm here at the DNC, picked up a cheesesteak at Pat's. He went to Pat's. The question was always going to be, because they always go, it's either Pat's or Geno's, right? He wound up going to Pat's, and we're told he got whiz with onions. So whiz whiff is what he wound up ordering at Pat's. All right, in case you're wondering, that's what happened today in Philadelphia after he gave his speech. So there you go. I guess we'll find out how he liked it in a little bit. We also have Pat Loeb from KYW is at the protests that are happening right now. Now, there's not a lot of them yet because most of the protesters are still in bed. Let's face it. They're not at work. They're in bed. So they're going to probably come out tonight. They really like to cause destruction and mayhem and chaos at night. We'll grab you some audio of the protests that are going on right now outside the Democrat National Convention. But it's important to note, they're nowhere near here. Nowhere near here. They have zones set up for the protesters. And this place is locked down. So they're not getting anywhere near the convention center. But they're still going to get a lot of media attention. They'll get a lot of media attention. And this is not what the Democrats want. They don't want this. But they're going to get it because the Democrat Party is insane. They have not locked down crazy. These are Democrat voters, and they're angry that the Democrat Party stands with Israel, even though I think that's like saying, you know, a guy who's a serial killer stands with his victims. I mean, it's not, they really don't stand with Israel. It's all for show. It's all for pretend. But the fact that they're willing to pretend that is something that these crazy people just can't tolerate. But here's Washington Post columnist telling CNN that costs might actually increase if Kamala Harris's price gauging plans are put into place. Cut number 7.
Catherine, I read your piece and I heard you just mention it. The federal ban on price gouging for groceries. You are skeptical of this. Why?
Well, first of all, nobody can explain what price gouging means. It's like that old line about pornography. I know it when I see it. In the sense that what does it mean to have an excessive price or an excessive profit margin? That seems to be shorthand for a price or a profit margin that bugs me, that seems too high. So, you know, it's very hard to pin down what this would actually mean. If you look at the legislation that, as I mentioned, is already in the Senate, led by Senate Warren and Senator Bob Casey and a slew of others, the particular way that this is written, which is likely to be the template for any proposal that Harris would eventually embrace, is especially bad in that it just bans excessive prices, grossly excessive prices, grossly excessive profit margins, and says that the Federal Trade Commission can use any metric it deems appropriate to decide what that would mean. Which basically says, like, it's not going to be markets, it's not going to be supply and demand that's determining how much your grocery store charges you for milk or for eggs, it's going to be some bureaucrat in D.C., which seems like totally unworkable, first of all, for the FTC to be deciding like how much Kroger charges for eggs in Michigan. But it also would be very bad for markets. We've seen this kind of thing tried in lots of other countries before: Venezuela, Argentina, the Soviet Union, etc. It leads to shortages. It leads to black markets, you know, plenty of uncertainty. And beyond that, the specific way this bill is written might actually increase prices because of some of the other language in it, things like requiring companies, public companies, to disclose in their quarterly reports, their quarterly earnings reports, how they're setting prices, which is a great way to help them collude, which normally we don't want them to do. So anyway, you know, the devil's in the details, I guess, for that bill. But it's really hard for me to imagine any form of legislation that preserves the spirit of what she's proposing that would not be, you know, at best do nothing, at worst cause a lot of harm.
At best, cause a lot of, at worst, whatever. Yeah, exactly right. Let's understand a couple things here, too. I don't believe for a second that they actually intend to implement any of this nonsense. I don't. Because they can't. It's not going to survive court challenges. It's a bunch of BS. It's all talk. But if it did happen, it would lead to those kind of shortages that she's describing. Absolutely. But I think this is pure and utter BS. They're coming out with a plan just so that they have a plan. That's it. And they just name an agency. Oh, the FTC will regulate. Oh, the FTC will step in. But you know what the FTC is actually doing? They're actually trying right now to stop the merger of Kroger and that other grocery store chain. They're in the middle of doing that right now. They don't want to see it. So the Federal Trade Commission, which has a long history of jumping in and meddling in private businesses, trying to stop this merger because they don't like the idea that two grocery stores could come together and form a big one. But you know something? I read this great Reason.com article about this over the weekend. Do you realize the number one and number two grocery stores in the country are actually Costco and Walmart? Do you know that? Costco and Walmart are actually the number one and two grocery stores in America. That's where most people... Albertsons, right. Thank you, Matt. Kroger and Albertsons. That's where most people do their grocery shopping. And they do a lot of it at... because Sam's Club, which is owned by Walmart, is also another big, and then here's another thing that people do with their groceries. They buy them online too. People also buy groceries online. So how are you going to have a marketplace step in? How are you going to have the government step in and do this? Here's something else to consider as well. If you're going to start trying to stop these two grocery stores from merging because you don't like the idea of a big, bad grocery store because you want, theoretically, more competition, all right? You want more competition. Then why would you turn around and tell grocery stores you can't raise your prices over a certain margin, even though those grocery stores, their price margins are about 2%. That's what they wind up, their profit margin is about 2%. So why would anybody then take the time to build another grocery store, create another grocery store? It's not the fact that Albertsons and Kroger might merge that might keep other people out of the industry. You already have massive grocery store monopolies, not monopolies now, but massive grocery stores now. They're called Walmart and Costco. I mean, we go to Costco all the time in my family. We have to. We have three kids. We go to Costco constantly. But there are certain things I go to Wegmans for because if I want to get fresh seafood or something like that, I typically go to Wegmans for that kind of stuff. Can't get everything at Costco. Can't get everything I want. But the government steps in to try to stop these two grocery store chains from merging, and then the government goes after them. So then if that merger doesn't go through, by the way, that means then you're going to have less incentive, believe it or not, for smaller grocery stores to try to come to market and compete. Because the whole purpose behind a small grocery store is to say, we are there to compete against big stores by offering something different. So maybe we have to charge a little bit more, but we give you a different experience. This is how a marketplace works. In the face of what the government views as monopolies, big businesses, a smaller option is created for consumers who want a different kind of experience. They want a more luxurious experience, for example. And that's what happens in a marketplace. They don't want to go to a big grocery store. They don't want to go to a big chain. They don't want to go to a big box store. So they wind up going to a little mom-and-pop deli, a little mom-and-pop grocery store. But there's no incentive for those stores to come about if they're going to have their prices capped. Because a Walmart can sustain it. A Costco can sustain it. Kroger's can sustain it, and Albertsons can, even if they don't wind up merging. But when you have these big grocery stores come together, it gives them the ability to survive the challenging headwinds of an industry. It gives them more security by merging together, which then gives their employees more security, which is why the employees should want to see this, because they're going to have more job security if this goes through. Because I think that if two grocery stores wind up merging together and joining forces together, and you believe in a free market system, that means then more stability for them. They wind up having to not compete against each other anymore. They can compete against other people. Walmart saves the average family over $3,000 a year, and that measurement was as of 2010. It has obviously gone up since then. So there's an answer to big box stores, and they do save families money, but some people don't want that experience. They want a different experience. But if the government goes after these stores, there's no incentive then for me to open up Richie's Grocery Store or Mama Zioli's Grocery Store, where you walk in and you're immediately warned about all the harm that could hit you everywhere around the store. Her voice beaming through. You know, like most of the time they beam, they go, oh, we're having a sale on olives. It'd be like, careful, baby. Watch your saturated fat intake. All right? Very high saturated fat in aisle number 4. So we've got 30 minutes of nonstop talk coming up straight ahead for you, brought to you by our friends at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. We are live at the Democrat National Convention. We're coming right back.
Rich Zioli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.